Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Image. I'm Dan Phillips. This program is focused on personal image development. These shows will discuss topics ranging from custom tailoring to business attire to communication and everything in between. Stay tuned. This is The Art of Image. Joining us here in foggy San Francisco. Today is September 9th, 2010. On today's Art of Image program, we'll be discussing NLP, that's Neuro-Linguistic Programming, with Dr. Monty E. Wilson. Monty Wilson has spent over 30 years training individuals, teams, and organizations and the development of personal and team effectiveness. His particular expertise is coaching executives and managers in the process of creating ever-increasing productivity, both in their careers and personal lives. Monty's educational background includes education and psychology. He is an expert in neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, and is a certified trainer in human performance engineering. Now, before we get started, I did want to give a brief background on what NLP is and where it sprang from. NLP was founded by Richard Bandler, a student at the time at UC Santa Cruz, and John Grinder, a linguist, during the early 1970s. And in a nutshell, neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, is a way of influencing the mind through language. And at its heart, NLP is a set of tools that allow people to model excellence processes in all its forms. How are you this morning, Dr. Wilson?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, let's start the show by asking some basic questions here. The first one I have for you is, can you give us some reasons as to why someone wants to learn NLP?
Well, I guess to begin with, neurolinguistics is the study of how people excel in any field, and then learning both subjectively and externally how to adopt this person's patterns of excellence. See, most people only study the external skill, the actual skill they want to learn, piano, sales, management, whatever it is. But NLP goes inside the mind of the expert to discover what's going on subjectively as this person is performing that skill you're wanting to model. And it teaches us how to adopt those internal patterns of excellence and expertise.
Now, that's interesting. What does learning the internal patterns of excellence change in the external? Because, you know, as you said, most people learn the external behaviors, and those are what we oftentimes see. What is it about learning the internal mechanisms that make the overall external seem better?
The mind and the body have a symbiotic relationship, or at least, you know, NLP, and I think people's just overall general experience of life says this is true. The mind affects the body affects the mind. If you change one, however, you change the other. If I'm feeling all low and down and depressed, I can change that experience merely by going for a run, changing my physical activity, and it changes the subjective experience, at least to some degree. And contrawise, if I change my internal experience, my behavior will change. If I have a skill, whatever it is, I have a skill of communication, but my internal experience while practicing that skill is, shall we say, less than resourceful. Maybe I'm talking to myself about how loud I am, I could be better, I'm not as good as so-and-so. I'm making pictures up in my mind of my dad telling me I made a stupid decision to, you know, go into sales or play piano, whatever. Then the degree of proficiency when I'm performing that skill, it's going to be limited. But there is another advantage. Let's say that I'm wanting to learn how to be, like you, a successful interviewer. So I come to Daniel, and you teach me some external skill. Okay, Monty, you've got to study the material on the person you're going to interview. You've got to be prepared. You've got to remain flexible during the process of the interview. You need to ask open-ended questions. Right? I come to you. You teach me the external skill. However, that process of becoming, to the degree you are, an expert interviewer, that process is sped up if I will begin asking you questions such as, hey, Dan, right before you go live, what is it you're feeling? Precisely. What is it you're seeing in your mind's eye? What are you hearing yourself saying? I mean, I want to get inside the mind, or if you will, the heart of the person I'm mocking, because there's something going on internally that's led to your expertise, that's augmented your expertise. Of course, another reason I recommend learning NLP is because it's the most powerful technology available today in the arena of communication.
I see. Wow. Now, was there a precursor to NLP? I mean, when you say it is the most powerful technology right now in terms of communication, was there a precursor?
I don't believe that there was, a single precursor. You spoke of Grinder and Bandler studies at University of California, Santa Cruz. Well, who they studied was the late Gestalt therapist Fritz Perls, family therapist Virginia Satir. We were speaking before the show. Hypnotherapist Milton Erickson was someone they also studied. Anthropologist Gregory Bateson. Okay, so Grinder, who was a linguist, along with Bandler, they studied these people, how they use language, how they use the process of communication. I mean, all the way down to the intonation used for every individual word, and they developed their model of NLP. So I wouldn't say those fields, Gestalt or whatever, was a precursor, but NLP is a mixture, if you will, of learnings from various other psychological models.
I see. So it's really taking from a lot of different sources.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Okay. Now, pulling your opinion, doctor, should really be learning it. And you know, who benefits the most from practicing NLP?
Pretty much anybody interested in personal excellence. I mean, certainly, the basic skills of NLP are useful for moms and dads, you know, in their community, their children, lawyers, doctors, salespeople, negotiators, athletes use some of the techniques of NLP and anchoring themselves into positive states, resourceful states. Coaches use spiritual leaders, politicians. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who would not benefit from this technology. I mean, think about it. Everybody listening right now is in sales. I mean, they may not realize it, but they're in sales. And so they better be an effective communicator, someone very effective in persuasive skills. Whether it's I've got to sell you to get me hired, I've got to sell you on maintaining this relationship, whatever it is. And so NLP can help in that process.
That's really exciting. Now, how can NLP benefit my personal image?
Okay, a couple of things come to mind. There's a book. Title is Unique Now or Never by Jesper Kunde. He writes about, talking about products now, but he writes about burning your product into the minds of your customers, and I'm quoting, leaving behind the warm glow. Now, think of yourself as a product, what Tom Peters refers to as brand you. NLP teaches how to burn your image into the minds of others, and in Kunde's words, leave behind a warm glow. Now, another benefit, let me be a little securitous here in answering the question. Have you ever met someone the first time? I mean, you've never seen them before, never heard of them before, you're out at a social event, and you meet them and instantly felt as if you had known this person all of your life. Bong, you know, wow.
That has happened to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's happened to 9.9% of, you know, everybody listening, 100, but you know, then they've got a dinner. But the psychologists wanted to figure out what was going on here. And so they studied this phenomenon, and they discovered a really simple reality about the human condition, something that really shouldn't have taken a whole lot of study. But that's how professors and psychologists make their money sometimes, is in, you know, research money. But what they discovered was people like people or like them. So you meet this person, and your brain, which is, I want to be careful here, this is a little simplistic, but your brain is like this super-duper computer, and it's picked up on thousands of bits of data being communicated. It's being communicated through the individual's style of dress, their energy, their eyes, you know, the windows to the soul, the skin, and their breathing pattern, their posture. And it correlates all this information, and then what we call intuition, it intuits from that information, bong, we've known each other for forever. Now, you, of course, sometimes you find out that, you know, there is no real mutuality, but most of the time your initial intuition was correct, was spot on.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Now, so if I understand you correctly, are you saying that the underlying reason for any positive feeling, or as you say, the warm glow that we receive or transmit to another person is solely based on our likeness or feelings of similarity with that individual? And the other part of that is, I mean, if that is true, is this the goal behind all of our communication? Is that what we want to achieve?
I wouldn't go so far as to suggest that this is the sole reason, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that it goes a long way toward creating and maintaining rapport with others. Now, listen, there's no communication without rapport, period. Rapport is the bridge, the connection. Rapport is what allows our communication to pass into the minds of others. So rapport is usually part of the process of communication, but it's not the goal. I mean, sometimes rapport is the goal. I just want to get to know this person and establish some kind of rapport for future conversations and communication. But most of the time, it's not the goal of the communication. Right? It's a process, and an absolutely necessary part of the process. So I want rapport so that I can convince, you know, this guy to buy my product, this lady to hire me, this audience to take action just so. And so I look at this the process of rapport and the idea of people liking those who are like them, and I ask myself, okay, what if I could create that experience, that bung experience, and yeah, all those people with whom I'm communicating at will. I could do it whenever I wanted.
Wow.
Now, do you think this would, this is going to be useful? I mean, so often we sabotage We sabotage ourselves. We sabotage our success by coming across as opposites. So we create rapport. You know, our words are correct. We've made a great presentation. We've been cogent, concise, clear. But something about our tone of voice or our style of dress, even down to our breathing patterns and our energy level, that create disrapport, which is not a good idea for communicating our image in a positive light, eh?
Yeah. And I suppose a lot of times, you know, when we're talking to someone new, I think it's natural to some extent that we often are looking at our differences rather than viewing our similarities or finding what is similar with that person. Would you say that is true on a general
level? There are personality types that sort for differences. You know, where are we different? They want to know because they're cautious by nature, or they want to know possible pitfalls in the conversation, whatever. And that's useful. I'm not saying that's not useful, but when you're seeking to gain rapport, you're looking at mirroring, and I don't particularly like that word, but you're looking at mirroring this person back to them. They want to see and hear and feel commonality. And if they don't, I mean, you're just broadcasting words. I mean, you start throwing words at a person without rapport, it's not going to be too effective.
And I guess you could say that they fall on deaf ears if you do that to some degree, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, depending on the degree of disrapport, I mean, let's think about something simple. Winnie the Pooh character Eeyore, you know. Well, slow moving, slow energy. And here I come to them. Hi, how you doing, Winnie? I mean, you know, it's a great day, and my words are fast, and I'm high energy. And, I mean, you can visibly watch this person, you know, lean back, if not step back out of your, you know, circle of influence. I mean, it's just much. And so if you rapport with this person, you're going to need to slow your speech pattern down and your energy down. Now, you can lead them to a faster, you know, paced conversation, but not until you get rapport with them.
I see. Now, Doctor, what are some common mistakes people make when applying NLP? You know, they've learned the skill to some degree. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the most common mistake, the biggest mistake, is in thinking that the words of the book are synonymous with experience. There's a principle that most of your listeners have probably heard, but it's huge, you know, in NLP circles, that the menu is not the food. I mean, simply because you've read a book, memorized a book on NLP, whatever, it doesn't mean you have a clue regarding what you've just read. I mean, reading about riding a bike is not the same thing as riding a bike. So I don't like going to such restaurants, but if you've ever been to a restaurant that the menu has pictures of food, most people, their experience is that the food looks far better than it actually tastes. And so I would say the biggest mistake is in thinking because you've read a book, you can now go out and do it. I think another common mistake is that too many people practice the technology of NLP in situations where, you know, they're really authentic yet. It's not part of them. It's not really a learned internally and externally behavior. So they come across as stilted rather than, you know, it being something natural and elegant and authentic. And so, you know, the mistake is practicing the techniques when your job is on the line or the sale is on the line or your image needs to make its most powerful effect on the people of the room. That's not the time to practice. You know, practice at home. Don't practice in areas where your job or your relationship is on the line.
Okay. Now, would you say that NLP not only requires practice, but that it also involves Is there a certain level of intuitiveness involved in it? I mean, are some people just more naturally able to pick up on these skills?
Well, first of all, yeah, I mean, I do a lot of sales trainings for and negotiation training for sales forces, places like ESPN or ABC, and anybody that's reached that level of expertise and in their skill as salespeople and negotiators, they've already learned an amount anyway, some degree, NLP principles and techniques without even knowing it. I mean, they just intuitively learn certain things. But NLP teaches that if one person can do something, anyone else can learn to do it. I mean, you can learn an achiever's, what we call mental map, and make your own. I mean, too many people think there are certain things that are impossible for them, and so they don't ever try. What I teach is that people should, okay, let's just say they should pretend that they can learn anything. Okay, and if I can get there, and I would say most of the time, not all the time, I can get them there, to just pretend, act like you can learn anything. Amazingly, people learn far more than they ever thought was possible. Now, if there is some kind of physical or environmental limit, I mean, you'll get the feedback and proceed accordingly. But I would say without those limitations, you know, some physical limitation, challenge or environmental, anyone can learn the process of the techniques of NLP.
Now, how long will it take for us to become, you know, relatively proficient in NLP and see results? And can you give us an example of the type of results we can expect?
Let me just right out of the chute. I don't think we ever master anything. I mean, we're always in a process. I mean, the experts in the field that you'll talk to at their most transparent and vulnerable moments, they'll tell you that they still have a long way to go. It's always a process. As I was telling you before the show, I mean, I spent 4 or 5 years, maybe 4,000 hours in formal training, and I'm still in the process of mastering. I still see weaknesses, places where I can get better, etc. But, you know, but what I would ask a person, you know, what is it you want to learn? What is your outcome? I mean, some people just want a rudimentary, you know, understanding, expertise. Others want to master or have a, you know, a greater level of mastery. But I think with any learning situation, progress depends on the individual's level of determination, their level of desire, their flexibility. This being said, I'd say my experience is about 100 hours, you know, of not just study, but, you know, someone coaching and out in the real world, watching you, your communication strategies and your modeling strategies. So 100 hours with a coach or a trainer that could get you to a place of basic proficiency. I mean, if the coach knows what he's doing, if she knows what she's doing, you should be able to notice significant differences in your ability to, what NLP talks about, accessing resourceful, powerful psychological states. You notice differences in your ability to identify yourself as someone with whom others want to, you know, hire, employ. You'll notice differences in your ability to gain and maintain rapport with others. In fact, I would say if any trainer, again, that knew what they were doing, let's say, for example, me, you spend just a few minutes with me, and you'll notice differences in the effectiveness of your communication the next day.
Wow. Okay. Now, you know, you mentioned 100 hours as a rough estimate to the amount of time needed to get you to come to some noticeable change. How would you suggest we pace that 100 hours? You know, do you recommend adapting one new skill that we've learned and then, you know, getting to some level of proficiency with it and then moving to the next skill? Is this like a fine-tuning process? You know, coach watches you and then fine-tunes your skill as you go along? How would you suggest that we pace that 100 hours?
Well, first of all, you don't just in NLP. There's a synergy between the skills, and so you're learning multiple skills at any given time, not just one. I mean, those skills can be broken down, and you might one day, focus on just one area. But there is a complex model, and it all kind of goes together. But I would say in pacing it, I mean, you don't want to do this 2 weeks. I mean, first of all, who's got that kind of time? But for me, the issue, the key is real-time practice. I mean, yeah, there's classrooms, there's workshops, but your coaches and trainers, they're going to give you assignments, homework, if you will, where you're going to take this newly learned skill or hopefully learned skill, and you're going to seek to engage or utilize this skill in specific situations. You come back, feedback. I like to, with my clients, I go out on sales calls with them. I watch them actually do the work. I always tell the person, say to the boss or whoever, you know, this is a guy I'm training, and he's not going to be saying anything. And so they leave me alone, and I watch, and then we go back, and we reengage and keep fine-tuning. And we keep going back and forth during that feedback process. I would say, you know, the 100 hours is probably going to be closer to over a period of months, not, days, certainly not weeks.
Now, I did have another question here. When we're doing this and when we're actually practicing NLP, are we arranging language in a certain way that has an effect? What is it that we're actually doing? You know, when you said that you were, you know, observing the salesperson, you know, interact with the client, what was it that you were looking at, or what was it that your student was doing? What was it?
Well, let's say that I'm coaching this person right now on some fundamental skills of rapport. And I've taught them that people let you know how they want to receive information. In other words, you know, some people are very audio. They love sounds. They love the sound of words. They love music. So other people are very visual. They love pictures. They love graphs. They prefer emails to phone calls, PowerPoints to one-on-one instructions. Those people are very kinesthetic. They're very physical. And people will let you know who they are in the word choices that they use, the predicates that they use. For example, if some person says to you, "Yeah, I hear what you say. Man, that's clear as a bell. That sounds great." They're letting you know how they're processing what you're saying, and so you begin to use predicates that are, auditorily oriented or visual or kinesthetic. So I'm going to listen to this person and see, have they learned how to use the person's words? I mean, I do an exercise in the training rooms where you have, and they'll share an exciting experience they've had, a holiday, a family vacation, whatever. And instantly they start talking about, let's say they were at Central Park and, you know, they saw Brad Pitt and he was, you know, filming a scene for his new movie and he looked this way and I saw this. They're having experience. Now, while they're talking, mismatch them on purpose. Wow, that feels really great. And you can visibly watch them skip the beat. It doesn't match. They're not talking about feelings. They're talking about what they're seeing. And for that slight, I created this report. Now, that can mean nothing for the intent of your communication, but it also can be the difference if it, you know, comes up in other, you know, ways of creating this report. It can shut down the communication process. So I want to watch the people and listen to them to see if they're able to do that. There are other techniques where you want to, we use the word anchor. I want to create an anchor so that every time this person sees me, You know, instantly they want to talk to me. They identify me as someone who knows what he's talking about. And there are certain things we can do to anchor that image into these desired logical state. And I teach people how to do that, and then I watch to see, you know, how effective, how ineffective, and then we go back and we, as you said, fine tuning.
I see. So in some ways, you're learning how to analyze this other individual in order to be more effective when you're communicating with them. Is that correct?
That's fair. Yeah, that's correct. Sure. Yes.
Okay. Now, Doctor, how can NLP benefit my career? You know.
I think one of the challenges we face in our careers is when and this is happening a lot now, we're not hiring anymore, so you have to start cross-training to be able to do other people's jobs that are no longer there. And so you're required to take on new skill sets, new behaviors. Let's say that my supervisor, I've just had a 360 feedback at the end of the year, and the feedback is that as a manager or leader, I need to be more assertive. And if I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not going to get the promotion I want, and I may not even keep my job, or I'm not going to get this sale, or I'm not going to get that raise. NLP specializes in teaching individuals how to generate the new behavior that maybe up until now, I mean, it's not been part of my personality or leadership style, my way of being, but I get it that I need to learn this new behavior. NLP teaches you how to first internally, you know, adopt the values, the attitudes, the state of mind, the beliefs that will make this new generated behavior authentic, right? It'll make it something that you can easily, you know, accomplish, easily perform.
Now, Is it correct to assume that this new behavior that we generate, you know, can become part of our personal image? You know, I guess what I'm really trying to say here is it going to feel natural to us, or are we going to feel like we're really acting outside of ourselves, and it, you know, and in doing that, it obviously wouldn't feel natural. So is it, at some point, are we going to feel like this is just part of who we are?
Well, there's great question. Well, first of all, let me give the just one metaphor. Actor. An actor learns to play a part. Learns to play a serial killer for a movie. And he does it so well, it's convincing, and he wins an Academy Award for his performance, all right? Was that who he was? No, it was just a role he learned to perform. But, are you there? There you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Now, that being said, what we aspire for, what I work toward with my clients is, hey, if the new behavior isn't natural, it's not yours yet. So then that's why I spoke earlier about the internal experience. I mean, if you take on a different behavior, but your belief system, your values, your attitude, your psychological state, any of these, all of these run contrary to the behavior you're trying to run, I mean, obviously there's going to be a breakdown. Let's say that your greatest value in life is security, and I'm coaching you toward being more assertive, you know, which goes against your desire to be very insecure. So the first thing I need to show you is that you may want to readjust your value system, even if it's just slightly, so as to achieve new behavior. But, yeah, what I want for the individual to work with is for it to be real, for it to be authentic. And I want it to be unconscious. In other words, when you first start driving a car, you know, you got into the driver's seat, and, you know, your dad or your mom or your instructor is sitting there next to you, or an older brother or sister. And, okay, first thing you do is you start the car. Next thing you do is you look behind you and around you. Next thing you do is you put your foot on the brake. The next thing you do is you put it in reverse. You back out. You turn just so. You now go into drive, right? So it's this whole conscious process, so much so that that's why so many students have wrecks, because they're thinking about the process, not the actual driving. But within a matter of months, it's unconscious. I mean, you just have it. It's yours, right? That's what I mean by the unconscious ability. It's just now. It's just your way of being. It's your way of performing, and that's the goal. And any new generated behavior is unconscious competence.
Wow, that's interesting. So it can then, in the end, feel like a natural, feel very natural to us in doing these and generating these new behaviors. It can feel natural.
Well, absolutely. Another tenet or principle of NLP is you're not your history, or you don't have to be your history. I mean, people come in and they constantly say, well, this is not the way I behave. This is not, I don't dress that way. I don't walk that way. I don't enter a room in fashion. Up until now, you haven't. You know, you learned this, and it seems natural, but it wasn't the way you were at 5 years old or 7 years old. It's something you learned through your time in school and influence of teachers and parents, and it was just a behavior that you learned. All right, but if you want to learn new behaviors, if there's an outcome that's so important to you and you realize that the only way I'm going to get that outcome is for me to adjust, add a nuance, or totally change so I generate an entirely new behavior for myself, you know, is that sufficient motivation? I think so. You know, if what you want is something that, you know, is critical to you, the raise, the sale, the relationship, whatever, then you're going to adjust yourself accordingly. If it's not that important, fine, you know, then just stay with what you've got and keep getting what you've always been getting.
I see. Now, Doctor, can you recommend any, I'm very much a person that believes in tools and in helping individuals. Can you recommend any good tools for learning NLP? And then also, for the beginner, some good books just as an introduction to the topic. Would be nice as well.
I'll give you some books your listeners can read. I just want to go back and restate, you know, the menu's not the food. That book learning, you know, it can only go so far. But, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, you need to read up a little bit to see if this is something you might be interested in or at least curious about. Probably old standby, he doesn't mention NLP by name, I don't believe, I haven't read the book in years, but is T. Robbins' book, Awakening the Giant Within. It's a good intro, got plenty of exercises. Another book is called NLP, The New Technology of Achievement. It's there's two authors. One of them is Steve Andreas. It's an excellent introduction to the technology of modeling people for success. Probably for me, the one I would other than maybe Robin, depending on, you know, what kind of reading and writing style the listeners like. I would say a book by Joseph O'Connor. It's called Introducing NLP, an excellent, content-rich book. One other, I don't remember her name. I think it's Connie or something like that. But, Steve Andreas so co-authored it. So if you just, you know, go to Amazon, Steve Andreas, it's called The Heart of the Mind. Now, this book is nothing but exercises. Okay, you know, it gives you the technique, what it is you want to accomplish, and it gives you all these exercises that you do. But I would suggest that if they've read the book and any of these books or any book on NLP and are curious to want to know more, I would go talk to a coach.
Okay. And finally, Dr. Wilson, what advice would you give someone who wants to start learning NLP?
Starting to repeat myself here, find a good coach. Book learning is not going to do it. And simply because a trainer has something like, I am a master practitioner, well, find out if they really are. my experience is that many of these people are really great at teaching, you know, standing up and giving a seminar. When it comes to actually training others to do the work, not so masterful. So you want to check the resources. Of course, I mean, obviously, you want to check out cost, time commitments, travel requirements, evaluate this in terms of what it is you want, how much you can afford, what it is you're after, the outcomes you want to realize. Really get, you know, find out if this person's, I say this, if their ethical standards match yours. I mean, as with any, you know, field in psychology, psychiatrists, NLP is no different. I mean, you've got a lot of people out there who are very powerful. Maybe they don't have your ethical standards. So you want to be careful there. Of course, always call, you know, log in to shuva.com, and they can provide a coach. Of course, that'd be me. And could help you out. Or, I mean, I can also, you know, if I'm not the guy, I can help you find someone else.
Okay. And now, Doctor, is there a way, if someone who had some more questions about the topic, is there a way to, for them to get in contact with you? Would that be through Shuva, or would
that Yeah, you could. There's contact information on the Shuva Group website, and you can contact me there. And I mean, I'll answer with 24 hours.
Okay. Great. Well, Doctor, I want to thank you so much. This has been an exciting program. It's a show that I've wanted to do for some time now, and I want to thank you for being on the show.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much.
Yes. And so I'd like to say bye for now, and
Okay. Bye
to all those listeners out there who, and if you know you have questions, more questions, please write us here at Blog Talk Radio. You can write us at artofimagetalk@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and bye for now. The Art of Image was sponsored by L.T. Bojics of San Francisco. I'm Dan Phillips. Thanks for listening.